Hello, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Upwising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hi there. Welcome to Wiki Politiki, Conversations for Co-Creation, where we shed light on the darkened corridors of power and shine a light ahead of us to where evolution is leading. The purpose of Wiki Politiki is to bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. In other words, to address issues instead of defending positions. Well, when Lyndon Johnson was president, when I was much younger, there was a very popular riddle. And the riddle went like this. How can you tell when the president is telling the truth? When he wiggles his ears, he's telling the truth. When he scratches his nose, he's telling the truth. When he rubs his eyes, he's telling the truth. When he opens his mouth, he's lying. Okay, well, we the people have been acculturated to being lied to by politicians, and now it's becoming clear that it's not just the politicians, it's the entire political system, including the corporate media, that's lying to us. Ever since the Jonestown massacre more than 40 years ago, the term drink the Kool-Aid has been used to describe weapons of mass deception. Today, however, that Kool-Aid has been rebranded as fine wine, as people are being asked to buy the notion that only the vaccine will protect us from the deadly COVID germ and allow us to return to quote-unquote normal. Our guest this week, Jack Reed, just wrote a compelling essay called Kool-Aid, where he lays out the deception after deception from the Gulf of Tonkin attack that didn't happen to the Patriot Act passed in the wake of the 9/11 attacks, to the current lockdown of both people and information during the COVID-19 crisis, each of which has increased the power of the state and diminished the power of the people. In the middle of this essay, he suggests that maybe what we need is a vaccine against deception. Well, the closest we have to that is recognizing the patterns of deceit and cultivating the courage to see them and call it out. And the good news is, in addition to being unblinkingly look at the awful truth, Jack is a clear-eyed visionary able to point us toward the world that we want instead and offer practical ways to get there. Jack Reed is a speaker, seminar leader, consultant for corporations and nonprofit organizations, a team-building facilitator, co-creator, and trainer in the Community Planet Consensus Process. He's the author of The Next Evolution, a Blueprint for Transforming the Planet. In addition to 15 years experience living in an urban cooperative community where he was an active leader, Jack has created and facilitated consensus trainings for many groups, starting with the Peace Theological Seminary in the early 90s in France, and most recently with the One Community team. Welcome, Jack.
It's good to be here, Steve.
Well, it's great to have you. And you and I met in Santa Barbara some years back, and I was impressed that not only do you talk about community, you've actually had real-life experience making this work with real people. We're going to get to that. But first, tell us about your recent essay, or maybe we should call it a rant, on drinking the uncool Kool-Aid. What inspired you to write this piece?
Well, listening to the lamestream media over and over again about the inject, 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 it was What is the real agenda here? And particularly since if one has access to listen to the science, the real science, it was pretty obvious that we were being fed Kool-Aid again. And so that reminded me of all the times starting back in high school when I was a senior and the JFK assassination, and then we were fed the MLK story, the RFK story, and there were things wrong with every one of those stories. And then I remembered the Gulf of Tonkin, where all but two congressional representatives voted for that war that cost millions of lives, and Agent Orange is still causing birth defects over there, and on and on and on. And the big story with the impossible 9/11 story that they're still feeding us, and which is, there's been studies on this. It was simply impossible. Anybody who saw the video that was taken off pretty quick of Building 7 being demolished in a obvious demolition later that afternoon after it was not even hit by a plane, and yet they've said this to us over and over again, and then anybody who's got tries to inject some reality, they're labeled as a conspiracy theorist, and so those are impossible conspiracy theories, and so that's how they can get past all of this with there not being enough media and political coverage and willpower to simply tell the truth about things. So I just, after I watched this inject over and over again, it seems so obvious that we're being fed genetically modified news all over again.
Generically modified. We call it generically modified news. Very good.
That's genetically modified news. And so they have got this down to an art that they can tell us now lies that are too big to fail. And so that's where we are. That was the inspiration for my rant. I just had to write it because I was just so miffed at their being able to feed this to people and having people buy it again and again and again.
Well, we'll get to that part, you know. But what I wanted to comment on is that essentially this is something that's been going on for a long time.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There have been people who've been aware of it, and yet there are other people who would agree with us on a lot of things politically, who would, you know, want to see a better world for people with more justice and all of that. And yet, for some reason, they don't have the eyes to see this. So, you know, for some of us, these deceptions seem pretty obvious, but what is it? Again, of course, we know that the media is, perpetuating this mythology. What is it that makes people buy this stuff continually? What is it that perhaps that you might be able to see, or I might be able to see, that these people are either not willing or not able to see?
Well, I think that people want to believe their government and their favorite newscasters, whether it be Fox or MSNBC or CNN or the local news. They want to believe this stuff because what's the alternative? To think about, well, how could the powers that be sacrifice over 3,000 people on 9/11? They wouldn't do that, would they? Well, they've done it over and over again. But people don't want to believe that we have people in decision-making capacities that are capable of doing that sort of thing. Also, in order for one to be a responsible voter, one would actually have to hire an army of independent investigators to really know what's happening behind the scenes and all of these things. The other thing is, compared with the 1800s, we're exposed to more information now in one day than people at that time were exposed to in their entire lifetimes. I hear people my age talking about how their memories aren't as good as they used to. And I say to them, is that the case, or is it because you just have a million times more things to remember than when you were in high school? The world is just that much more complicated, especially with the internet nowadays. And so people have to figure out what to tune in and what to tune out and who to believe and who not to believe. And it's just almost impossible for people to have the time and the focus to sift all, through all this misinformation and information and see what's actually happening.
You know, something that you said struck a chord, and that is we want to believe that our system is trustworthy. And back in 2006, I decided that I was going to break the 9/11 story through the what I call the soundless barrier. So I went to Bohemian, which is our local newspaper here, our local entertainment paper, our local entertainment paper. And I'd written some articles for them before, and so I went and I called the editor, and I said, here's my idea. I want to interview David Ray Griffin, who is a very well-known theologian who has just written a book called The New Pearl Harbor, and that was really about the idea of the 9/11 being an inside job and so on. And she said, absolutely not. I said, wouldn't you be interested in finding out how somebody who is a very mainstream theologian might have come upon these ideas that you would consider conspiracy theory? And she thought, she said, well, yeah, I think that would be a good angle. So I went and wrote the story with no guarantee it's going to be published. So 6 weeks later, I called her back, tell her the article's done, had no idea what she was going to say. And she was real quiet. And she said, you know, I've been talking with my son about this. And we've come to the conclusion that 9/11 was indeed an inside job. And she says, I feel so disheartened by that. So here was somebody who was willing to take that step and lift that veil, only and recognize that that is really not a very good feeling to have to face that level of shadow. So I'm wondering, what is it that enables people to actually face that? What kind of feedback or pushback did you get on your little Kool-Aid post?
Oh, I just sent that to people who wouldn't be upset by receiving it. So I didn't send it out to people who weren't going to have the consciousness to enjoy it.
So what is it that makes some people be able to encompass this kind of demonic toxicity? And what is it that would, what's the opening for people, do you think?
Well, I want to add that right now there's so many broken things that need fixing with the climate, healthcare, inequality, poverty, racism, environmental destruction, the quality of our soil that is not producing the nutrients that we need for healthy food. And so we're kind of progressive focus on all these things. And it's a good question for most people who have not gone far outside the box. And one of the things I say also, Steve, I think you'll agree with this, that as much as people like you and I know that's going on, and as much as you and I suspect about what's going on, if we really knew everything that was going on, it would blow even our minds.
So, yeah, I think you might be true. That might be true. Yeah, exactly.
There are cover-ups that are going on that would just be monumental, dwarfing all of them right now. And I don't even want to get into it. There are other people who are into it, but dwarfing all of these is the UFO cover-up.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right.
that would be the biggest story that would knock everything else out, because there's free energy available. It's been available. This stuff is starting to come out a little by little as they release things. But it's a good question about where people can go and what they can do. And so as we get into the next segment, I can start talking about those things.
Well, let's jump in. You know, I'm always curious about community, and I always want to know how people find your calling. So what was it that sparked your interest in community and then in living and being part of a community?
Well, in high school, I read a book about an ancient civilization. I was 15 at the time, and it talked about how in that civilization, they lived in a model that was for the highest good of all the people. And in my idealized mindset, I saw how that model, if demonstrated, could create a world that worked for everyone. And it has been, ever since that time, it has been my mission, whether it was at the forefront or on the back burner, but I've seen what can happen. I've seen how we can transform this planet. And so that's what I'm into. That's what my life is all about.
Well, we're going to take a very short break. We'll be back with Jack Reed and talk more about community and the next evolution blueprint for transforming the planet. This is Steve Behrman, and we're on Wiki Politicky Radio. We'll be back very shortly.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
COVID-19, brought to you by CDC and the Ad Council.
If you're feeling increasingly lonely right now, you're not alone. It's totally normal. Even though we may not be able to get together in person, connecting virtually with friends and family still gives you a chance to interact with people and may help raise your spirits. Join a virtual book club, set up group text chats, or online video coffee breaks with coworkers.
Find more self-care and coping tips at coping-19.org.
Well, we're back now with our guest, Jack Reed. We're talking about both the Kool-Aid and a healthy drink that we can drink. Instead of that, the healthy drink being recognizing that we're all connected and that there is a actual divine community that we can be living in. So let's talk a little bit about your experience in community. Start at the beginning. What have you learned about being in community that's going to be helpful to people as we begin to design this this truly new world?
Well, I was living in a spiritual urban community as part of my spiritual group in just west of downtown Los Angeles. It was called the Peace Theological Seminary, and I did live there for 15 years. It was what I would call a small C community, in that we were a group of people living together, but it wasn't anything like what I've been talking about in terms of what I would call a capital C community. the vision that I had in my consciousness, this idealized vision that I was carrying for all those years, for over 20 years, I finally thought, you know, people need to see an actual description of this thing to know what it is. Because when I start talking about this, people don't have a reference point for knowing how life could be so different than it is now. So I created a Peace Theological Seminary class, and there were a half a dozen of us who got together, and I thought we could knock this description out in 10 weeks. And it turned out to be 3 years, because the group was really interested in going into depth with this description. And instead of having topics like for instance, decision making or governance, our question was, we asked a series of 12 questions that described the community in detail, and the economics question, for instance, was how do we share our abundance? And it created a model for sharing abundance. The decision making was, how do we reach consensus? The healthcare was, how do we vitalize ourselves? The food production and preparation was, how do we nourish ourselves, etc. So we had this 45-page description of what that was, and then later I got an inspiration. Well, I got to write a book, and then I thought, well, I'm not really a writer. So I just outlined everything and then tried to get somebody else to write the book, and then I thought, yeah, I got to write this book. And so I wrote the book, and the book actually won all kinds of awards. So I had to take my apology out at the end of the book about it, where I said, I'm not much of a writer. I apologize for being repetitious. But it's very different, the model that we're proposing, because this is, while I was flipping, there was anywhere from 40 to a little over 100 of us at any one time. And even though it's a spiritual community, not everybody really held the conscious. Not everybody could have been effective at consensus decision-making. I've heard and consulted with communities that said, yeah, we tried consensus and it didn't work. And I said, well, first of all, did you train people in consensus decision-making? And they said, no. Did you screen people? No. And I said, well, then I agree with Diana Leaf Christian, who lectures about this. I said, if you haven't been trained and screened, don't use consensus, because the prerequisite is people who hold that consciousness of the highest good. And what's different about the Community Planet consensus training is we focus on that consciousness in the first part of that training. Sure, it's easy to talk about all the tricks and the things to do and the procedures and all that, but it's really all about consciousness. As a matter of fact, when people talk about sustainability these days, I ask people, what is the key to sustainability? And people say, well, it's energy, or it's permaculture, or it's regenerative agriculture, or whatever. And I said, no, the key is consciousness. Because people who hold the consciousness of the highest good for all concerned will do whatever it takes to make this happen. Otherwise, it's just trying to impose rules on people. So it's all about the consciousness. Everything is all about the consciousness. Barbara Marx Hubbard, I'm guessing most people might remember her, she was the first interview, actually, after I wrote the book. It was the first time I was on anybody's show. I was kind of intimidated to be on a show the first time. But she said that the biggest challenge facing the planet is separation. I had defined that before as isolation and alienation, but I think she got it right. Separation is the issue because people are separated not only from each other, but they're separated from within themselves and their relationship with themselves, and they're separated from nature and their relationship with nature. So, yeah, addressing separation is the key. And when people hold that consciousness of the highest good for all, it's addressing that separation on all levels. And one of the things also that people really have to get when they think about how can we create a world that works for everyone, we've been doing this everyone for themselves approach to how we go about life on this planet unquestioned for thousands of years. And it's led to warfare. It's led to environmental destruction. It's led to poverty and the wealth inequality gap. It's led to racism. It's led to all of these imbalances, the every person for themselves system. And if we had a system based on the highest good for all concern, for instance, when it comes to economics, with money as the medium of exchange, there's just so much waste that goes into that system. Whereas if we had cooperation as the means of exchange, then we could eliminate 85% of the jobs that exist in our country. 85%. You talk about addressing environmental issues, that takes care of the major issues right there, because that's the energy that goes into that. That's all the products and the resources that go into that. If we define wealth as use and access rather than possession, then we can be far wealthier and have access to far more things. And so as we describe community, we describe living in that way where people don't own their individual plots of land and their individual houses. People own the entire community. But these are people who've been trained and screened for holding that consciousness of the highest good and are committed to help making a world that works for everyone. And as a byproduct of that, they get to have happier, healthier, more abundant lives on all levels. They get to connect with people as opposed to the isolation that we have now where people don't know their neighbors, they're involved with elected officials, and in these communities that we talk about, people are communing with one another. They're in regular connection with one another. There is no mental illness or crime or need for police within these communities because there's just people would recognize anybody who's gotten out of balance and be able to address that before there's any issue. And in terms of health care, it was maddening listening to the Democratic debate on health care because they were all talking about, oh, do we go to a single-payer system? How do we do insurance and all of this? Nobody was talking about health. And how to address health care is getting people healthy. In this country, we have epidemics of obesity and diabetes and cancer and heart disease and autism, and nobody's focusing on health. There's food deserts in this country where people don't have access to any healthy food within 50 miles of their house. People don't have any awareness of what it is to be healthy consumers. And agriculture, big ag with the glyphosate, anybody listening out there, if you're eating any wheat or grains that are not organic, do yourself a favor and stop. This is what Monsanto and now Bayer are being sued about because this is a toxin that people are putting into their bodies all the time. The average American is consuming a couple of hundred pounds of sugar a year. But because I'm not consuming any, then some people must be consuming way over the average. But so just maddening debate and having nobody address these issues. There's just so much money involved in these things and throwing out products to people with fast foods and all this stuff. And people would be far happier and healthier if knew anything about nutrition and then had access to things like regenerative agriculture, which is restoring the soil so that the plants can actually have the vital elements that can actually add to people's health. Anyway, I've been kind of on a rant here again.
Well, no, you made a number of really good points. I want to get back to one of them. You know, you were talking about cooperation as a means of exchange. Wealth is use and access rather than possessions and so on. And when we look at this quote-unquote New World Order that's being ordered from the top down, there's a lot of these kinds of things that they want to put into practice. You know, the idea is that you won't need to own any possessions and all of that stuff. You'll be given a stipend by the government if you get your vaccination, if you agree to all of these social conditions. And obviously, progressive people who want to see social and economic justice, they want to see a clean environment, sustainability, the words that are being mouthed by that particular side really sound like they're moving us in that direction. But apparently they're not. And so there are people who are very concerned about our freedom to choose what we consider healthy and so on, and looking to get past all of this. So I think that you make a really good point that we really want to have all these things. And the difference is we want it to be from the grassroots up, from the bottom up, rather than imposed from the top down. So, and I think you're pointing toward spiritual foundation is really essential. Years ago, we met a hypnotherapist who had written a book called The Answer to Cancer, and he worked primarily with cancer patients. And his first question, one of his intake questions was, when did you first become separated from spirit? Because, that is really, we get fragmented, we get separated, and then all of a sudden, we don't have our resources, and then we can be manipulated by people who are speaking words that are designed to go right to our emotional brain and get us enrolled in either in fear or in hope, hopium. Deniatol, these drugs that we see all around us, you see. And so in looking at where we are here right now, this is where we are. And then the question is, well, how do we get to this? Before we get there, how do we get to this more ideal world? What are some of the what is the blueprint for transforming the planet? What is the vision that you see? We call it television, where I tell a vision to you, you tell a vision to me. The Bible says where there's no vision, the people perish. So I'm taking where there is vision, people thrive. So what is this vision that you have for the next evolution? What would it feel like and look like?
Well, people who envision a solution like this usually use some form of the Bucky quote. The one on the back cover of the book I use is, in order to change something, don't struggle to change the existing model. Create a new one and make the old one obsolete. The current system is broken beyond repair. People need to see a new system. And so what we're talking about here is to create a community of, say, 500 people initially, and then six of these 500 people communities for about 3,000 in one place, with people who hold that consciousness for the highest good, to have the whole economic system transform into one based on sharing resources, so that people living in the community, there's no cost for housing, healthcare, food, and people are working cooperatively in each of these 12 areas. And this is described in detail in the book, how to do this. But people are going to have more free time, happier, healthier, more abundant on all levels, more time for play, less stress, more connected within themselves and with others and nature, and having nature right there to commune with. There's one of my favorite quote in the book is the one that the Community Planet Group came up with. We're going to have to start to learn to start living with more fun in our lives. And this is what's going to attract people to come in and see this and say, wow, these people are living way more abundant and happier lives on all levels. What do I need to do to be a part of this? And that's what's going to start the replication of these communities all over the world. And it's going to be what changes the existing every person for themselves system. And those people who are the power brokers today, if they can't transform their consciousness to be a part of this new system, then they're simply going to be left behind. But meanwhile, the world is going to see, oh, we could have much better lives with this model. And the replication of that over and over again can transform the planet within a generation.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Jack Reed talking about how we get from the ideal to the real deal. We'll be back after these messages on Wiki Politiki.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
The United States has the highest rate of incarceration in the world. At the Equal Justice Initiative, we believe mass incarceration has to end. There is this presumption of dangerousness and guilt that gets assigned to black and brown people. We have to confront our history of racial injustice and commit to a new era of truth. There's something better waiting for us, something that feels more like freedom. Truth can inspire change. Please learn more at EJI.org.
Well, we're back with our guest, Jack Reed. So much to talk about in so little time. One thing that I'm curious about, obviously you have to have a certain level of consciousness in order to accommodate other people and be flexible and also have this this larger sense. To what extent can people learn that? Educate themselves to open themselves to be more aware of what it takes to live cooperatively with other people?
Well, for one thing, the consensus trainings that Community Planet offers can really assist in getting people there. So that's one thing. And some people are more cooperative by nature. My mother, who was a right-wing militaristic Republican, she could have easily been a part of these communities that we talk about. And my brother, one of my brothers, both of my brothers, actually, one who is just doesn't know much about these things, and the other following in my mother's footsteps to become a Republican. But both of them would have easily fit into the community because both of them could have cooperated for the highest good of all easily. And some people are there, and other people just have something that they need to address within themselves to get there. Now, not everybody is there right now, and not everybody can get there easily, but there's time for people because these communities are not going to happen all at the same time, all over the world. It's going to be one, and then there's two, and then there's four, and then there's eight, 16, 32. That's how it gets done within a generation. And when these people see the benefits that people are having of living in these cooperative communities, they're going to say, you know, my life is hard here, and I'm not anywhere near as happy or experiencing the kind of loving that I'm seeing in these people who are living in these communities based on the highest good for all. So I've now got an interest, a self-interest in seeing what I can do to move my consciousness into one that benefits me, even out of selfishness.
Well, so I think that's right. Everybody wants to be happy. And if you see that happiness is connected to our relationships with other people. My guest several weeks ago was David Corton, who wrote Agenda for a New Economy, When Corporations Rule the World. And his work right now is really focusing on exactly that. The actual benefits of being in a cooperative society where you're not using your energy to thwart other people or to be in a rat race, but rather where there's an abundance of joy. And his motto is we need economic sufficiency and spiritual abundance.
Yeah. And a lot of people, feel free to share anything that I have with anybody, because my mission is to help transform the planet. So I don't have copyright on, well, I probably do have copyright, but anybody's welcome to take this information, use this information. It's open source. A lot of people are trying to describe systems that can change things within the existing everyone for themselves system. What we're doing here and what we're doing is we want to move out of that paradigm altogether. Back to the Bucket quote, in order to change something, don't struggle with the existing model, create a new one. So That's what we're doing here. People need to see a model of how different it can be and how easy it could be to do that. And once these things get started and people can come and visit and stay there for a while and perceive the benefits, and the alternative media covers this kind of information and it goes out all over the world, some of the people in positions of power are going to be scratching their heads over this until they also realize that as good as they think their life is right now, it could be a hell of a lot better.
Or a heaven of a lot better. It could be a heaven of a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious about back to your small C community with the Peace Theological Seminary. Obviously, you had an idealized vision of how that could work. How did it work? What were the highlights? What absolutely worked, and what were the challenges? I know it wasn't the all-in community like you're describing, but nonetheless, obviously people consider themselves in community. They were probably living together. What were the what worked, clearly worked, and what were the obvious challenges?
Well, shortly after I got there, we created a system where we worked together in greater cooperation than what had been going on before I got there. So that worked, and it also showed us in a year's time the people who were really involved in cooperation and those who were not. And the ones who were not left. So we're asked to leave, actually. And then we entered into a kind of great period of time where people were really focused. The camaraderie was great. It was a lot of fun. And slowly over time, things, the focus of people changed, and it wasn't the togetherness that had been there in the earlier days. So at one point, I was in the position of what was called the steering director, and I kind of looked around. And I thought, you know, these people are doing something very different than what I'm imagining could be done in community, and so it's my time to leave now, which was great because they were going on to something else, and I'm still involved with the spiritual group, but I decided to pursue the Community Planet vision outside of that. But again, it was all about consciousness, but people were not. It was not a resource sharing kind of community. People had their own incomes and you know, so it was very different. It was what I call the small C community.
Well, consider the level of commitment that it requires to do it the way you're talking about. Often there's a religious, you know, you mentioned your Peace Theological Seminary, but often successful communal living or communities are focused around a religious belief or a shared ideal. You know, in this country, we can look at, this is not like communal living, but we can look at the LDS Mormon community, we can look at the Amish community as being kind of extended families that do things a certain way, that have a certain core ideas that keep them together. You know, and at the Oregon Country Fair, one of the friends I made there was this wonderful woman who was a Mormon hippie. And she's a wonderful hippie, you know, and just young, very vivacious. And she said, you know, what I like about the Mormon community is the community, that there is actually an infrastructure where people help one another. And interesting, you mentioned your mother, who is politically conservative in a certain regard. In those quote-unquote old-fashioned values, there's a lot of that natural sense of help and communication, whereas we get to the more urban, progressive people who have the perhaps the progressive ideology that idealizes community, when it comes right down to it, they may not be the most helpful people to their neighbors.
Well, I think that in the model that we've proposed, it would be that anybody from any religion who held the consciousness of the highest good and had demonstrated their ability to do that with consensus decision-making, I think there's a lot to be gained and shown for people of different faiths or no faiths or whatever, mm-hmm. coming together to work this, to demonstrate the model. Because people who share the loving for one another and who have the mindset that everything is really one thing, and separation is an illusion, that these people can work together for the common goal of, hey, we all want to create a planet that works for everyone and for all life on the planet. We all want to restore nature. We all want to see what we can do to assist the world with its many, many challenges.
Let me offer a hypothetical. Let's say a dozen of us here decided that now is the time. We bought some land. We have some place out in the country. We think that there's a multi-generational community. And we, you know, we want to be partially, financially sustainable, grow our own food. You know, back in the day when I studied communal communes, there was the famous Twin Oaks community in Virginia, Louisa, Virginia,
yep.
where they made
yep.
hammocks. They were in the hammock making business. So they had a industry 50 years ago or 40 years ago, whenever they were doing it. And I'm very curious about your coaching on consensus. So let's say, you know, the people that I've gathered are reasonably mature, have this certain sense that they're ready to commit their lives to doing this because they do believe in that ideal that you mentioned. What would your coaching be in regards to consensus? Take us through a four minute consensus training. What would you emphasize in how to make decisions that way?
Well, the first part of our training is all about the consciousness and accessing that consciousness of the highest good. And we have exercises to do this that are fun and interactive. And at the same time, people go through a lot of growth in doing this. So this would be great for any group of people who are planning to do that kind of a thing to check it out further. They can go to the communityplanet.org website and see information on that. Before we go, I also, besides the communityplanet.org website, and if anybody's doesn't have the vision yet and wants to learn more about it, you can go there and get access to the book, The Next Evolution, The Blueprint for Transforming the Planet. There's a page there on consensus trainings. And also go and see our partners at One Community. You can find that, you can Google One Community Global. Our partners share the same vision. They've got this community completely described in 7 different villages down to the nuts and bolts. So thank God for them, because Community Planet just is working in collaboration with them and not having to reinvent something that they have already done. Their founder says that he and I share the same brain. But also, I wanted to add before time runs out that I have a saying that the solution for everything is the solution to anything, because I can show how this community solution addresses any challenge or issue that anybody can bring up about what's happening on the planet. It is just so easy for us to move into an alternative model. It just needs to be built and demonstrated, and then we can transform this planet.
And you know, this is really very, very helpful in understanding that there's such a longing for this, and it's important to recognize that the institutions of society that are clinging to this this me or you model and frankly, the money is there. So, I mean, in terms of finding, finding the money to start a community like this, which of course is, at the outset, there's going to have to be financial resource. Right now, even though there may be a longing for all of this, the institutions of society are working against it, and this idea of consciousness, the consciousness that's required. I think you hit on something when you said that part of the first aspect of the training is to allow for this higher consciousness to show up. And we are so used to having our will, you know, putting our will in the driver's seat and trying to make things happen. And as people become, I think, more spiritually adept at allowing the universe to have its way and recognizing where life wants to go and ride life in the direction that it wants to go. I don't think life wants to go in the direction of shutting things down and turning us into machines. So we have to look at where is life wanting to go in terms of preserving the natural world and preserving our connection with the one spirit and healing that delusion of separation. So you're saying that fundamental to having a community like that is having the awareness of how indeed there is a higher view, and that's what we are to tune into. Is that what you're saying?
I think you've got it, Steve.
Well, you said it too. Jack Reed, it's a pleasure having you today. I look forward to seeing you sometime on the Funway.
Yeah.
By the way, on our page, on our Wiki Politiki page, when you listen to this and replay, you'll be able to find the actual communityplanet.org link, so you can go there directly and find out more about Jack Reed's work. So much, Jack, thank you so much for being with us today on Wiki Politiki, and I'll be back again next week.
Thanks, Steve.
Bye.
Bye. Next.